Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Living history by acting out famous battles, gunshots, fatigue, and all. That's how Charlie Schroeder decided to study history. He's an actor and author of the book Man of War, My Adventures in the World of Historical Reenactment. He's also a sometimes public radio producer. Charlie, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you so much for having me.
So why did you decide to tackle the last two millennia of Western civilization by reenacting its battles?
Well, you know, I had moved out from my home here. I lived in New York for 8 years. I moved out to Los Angeles, and I was kind of felt very adrift, you know, from this East Coast traditional upbringing. And I had worked at a Renaissance fair when I was about 20 years old, and I saw these historical reenactors come in. And I kind of wanted to know about history. And so my wife and I went to what's called a timeline event. And that's where these reenactors from all different periods come from, you know, ancient Rome to Vikings to Celts. And I thought, wow, what a great way to learn about history, not just by, you know, reading a lot of great books, mm-hmm. but by inhabiting these characters from the past.
But how does that teach you history if you focused on these war reenactments? Is there any value in this other than glorifying war?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that what you do, it depends on what era you recreate. So, for example, if you're going to be an ancient Roman legionnaire, I mean, it's kind of fun and silly, and you get to wear a tunic and beat somebody over the head with a foam sword or whatever. But if the closer to us, people actually reenact Vietnam and World War II. And what's really amazing, actually, about doing those is I had never stepped foot in the shoes of a soldier. I had never asked myself what that's like. I've been a civilian for my whole life. And it makes you not only empathize with the soldiers and what they must go through on a day-to-day basis, but it also makes you look at war as a whole and ask yourself those questions like, you know, is this necessary? You know, what we do and the choices that we make by sending people into war.
So you spent 15 months doing this all over the place. What were some of the favorite reenactments that you took part in?
Well, actually, one of my favorite ones was the Roman reenactment, which took place at this 26,000-square-foot replica auxiliary fort that these two men have built in a tiny town in Arkansas called Lathe, Arkansas, population 385. And every year they do this reenactment where, you know, it's on private land and nobody can see it. And the year I was there, we reenacted AD 43, which, you know, I couldn't have told you anything that happened in AD 43. I can barely tell you anything that happened in AD 43. Mm. But it was just this incredibly wacky, you know, weekend, you know, and I learned that, you know, first century Rome looks a lot like Arkansas. But also, It's not just military reenactments that people do. One of my other favorite reenactments was a thing called the Big Row. And this is where people in New York State row these replica bateaux on waterways up and down the rivers. And we were on the St. Lawrence River. And that was fascinating to me.
And reenactors take this stuff very seriously. If you're aiming for complete authenticity, what are some of the specific rules that you found people are sticklers about sticking to?
Well, obviously no modern devices, you know, which is one of the appeals. And it's I should say that not everybody who does this is, you know, historically, you know, minded, and they're not just into it for history. Some people just want to get away from our modern lives. So obviously, you know, the food in which we were eating was trying to be as period specific as possible. No modern items. Things that we were doing were, starting fires with flint and steel in some cases, sleeping out in period authentic tents. So it's in a word, it's miserable, really. I mean, it's just absolutely grueling. And if you're, you know, if you want to get away from your, you know, smartphone for the weekend, I highly suggest it.
Listeners, we only have a few minutes for this, but any historical reenactors out there want to give us a call? Tell us about the wars you have, quote unquote, fought. Why'd you do it? What did you get out of it? Any historical reenactments, a good way to teach you about the past? What have you done? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 for Charlie Schroeder, author now of Man of War, My Adventures in the World of Historical Reenactment. So how does one die or get wounded on the battlefield in a reenactment?
Well, you know, it all depends, again, on which one you're doing. But often, if you're just tired, you just say, you know what, I'm just going to take a dirt nap. And it's very important when you do that, that you should always face away, if these are taking place in a public environment, to always face away from the crowd, because, and away from the sun, I should add, because you never know how long you're going to be dead for. And typically, you do want to see or watch the rest of this battle that's taking place, and you don't want to be directly into the sun. Mm. You know, sometimes, you know, they have different rules. Like, for example, when I did a World War II reenactment, as if I could see the flash of fire, I was supposed to be dead and from coming out of a rifle. But, of course, what happens is that people don't play by the rules. They just want to continue on and on and on fighting and whatever. But I was trying to be a stickler for the rules. So as soon as I saw that flash of fire, I died. And then, of course, you have to be careful where you die so you don't die on a mound of ants, for example, or a cactus, which I did.
Doesn't sound fun.
No.
So you didn't go to Rome to reenact the Battle of Rome. Stalingrad.
Yes.
You didn't go to Stalingrad.
No. I was in the plains of Colorado, 60 miles east of Colorado Springs. This was the first reenactment that I did, and I was very surprised. After I'd gone to this timeline event, I noticed that there was one group, a notable mission, that they were not there. So I Googled Nazi reenactment, and to my surprise, I found out that people actually do this. And so they actually reenacted the Battle of Stalingrad, which is really one of, like, history's just absolute most gruesome, worst, you know, battles ever. And what a strange way to spend your weekend, you know. So we were out there in the plains of Colorado, and it dropped to 20 degrees, and suffice to say, after 9 hours, I went AWOL. I couldn't take it. No. I mean, it was absolutely awful. I had gone 36 hours without sleep. We had no sleeping bags. It was dropping to 20 degrees again that night. We were supposed to launch a surprise attack on the Russians at 3 a.m. And I said, you know what? You guys are a bunch of Nazis. I'm out of here. This is crazy.
So pertinent then to our end of war series, which we're wrapping up next week, on whether war is inevitable or if humans can ever abolish war. Do you think historical reenactments bring us closer to or farther away from the end of war, or is it all just fun and it's completely irrelevant to anything that heavy?
Well, I think that some of it is just fun and irrelevant, but I do think that some of it can actually have a very big impact. We are a nation where the civilians and the military, there's a chasm between those two. I think only 20% of members of Congress have served in the military. You know, it was very easy to ignore Iraq and Afghanistan because it didn't personally impact many of our lives. But once you step foot in the shoes of a soldier and you actually go out there and you sort of get the sense of what they go through, I do think that it will change the way you look at war. I didn't understand war before I started writing this book, and I don't understand it anymore afterwards. I think it's a horrible thing that should never happen.
John, in Long Island City, you're on WNYC. You do reenactments?
Yes, I do. I do reenactments of the American Civil War, which is probably the most popular time period that people reenact, and I also reenact the First World War. I do French soldiers, so the First World War.
And what do you get out of it? What's the thrill or the learning experience?
Yeah, I mean, I guess for me, I mean, I have to speak to me and the unit that I belong to, because you end up basically you join these groups. It's not, most people don't just show up as individuals. And so you fall in with groups that are like-minded. We have sort of a higher principles, I guess. We're out there for the history, for the remembrance of the people that we portray. And we take it very seriously because we realize that we are portraying people that lived and struggled and fought and suffered and all that. I mean, that's what I get out of it because, you know, I wasn't satisfied with just reading about history and sticking to the pages. I wanted to go out and experience just even a small part of it. And you can do that through reenacting.
Does your
there's other people out there that, you know, are just into the guns or just into the uniforms.
Right.
And they're out there for the thrill. But, you know, I generally just don't associate with those people.
Thank you very much. Did your unit fight for the Union?
I'm in a group called Liberty Rifles, which portrays both sides.
Uh-huh. Thank you very much. Wes in Brooklyn has a question about that. Right, Wes?
Yes. I've heard that everybody wants to be a Confederate in Civil War reenactments, and the big problem is just finding people that want to be Union soldiers.
Is that true?
That's actually absolutely true. In fact, a lot of units, they'll make you go blue for 3 years to balance out the sides. There are so many people that want to be Confederates that you have to serve time, quote unquote, for at least 3 years as a Union soldier before you can ever go gray. And that was certainly the case at the Civil War reenactment that I did in Florida. The Union side was outnumbered about 5-1.
We should, of course, mention that today is the anniversary of D-Day. And a huge reenactment, I understand, is planned for mid-August, 2 days in Ohio. You going?
I don't have any plans as of right now, but, you know, if an opportunity comes up, I might just go.
It's hard for me to imagine how you reenact D-Day, nevertheless, in the middle of Ohio.
Right. Well, and that's one of the things is that, you know, I don't think that historical reenactments ever really try to be, you know, a facsimile of those events. Obviously, people would die, you know. But it's a way in which if they can find terrain that looks somewhat similar, then they'll try to create something that resembles slightly what happened on those days. But, you know, it's more of a remembrance, I think, than anything, a commemoration than anything else.
So if you had to give one piece of advice to people who are intrigued by hearing you today, where should they start?
Well, I guess you could start with my book, but I mean, you know, it's certainly something that find an era of history that you really like, investigate it, learn about that, and then portray that accurately, because I think that's the message that we should be sending on to people is what really happened, not revising the past.
Charlie Schroeder, actor, public radio producer, now the author of the book, Man of War, My Adventures in the World of Historical Reenactment. Fascinating. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
Lisa Allison, Jody Abergan, Paige Cowett, and Alana Casanova-Burgess produced this program with help from Reem Nasser. Our senior producer is Megan Ryan. Debbie Fountain and Leora Noam Kravitz tag-teaming at the audio controls. Follow me on Twitter at Brian Lehrer and Facebook.com/Brian Lehrer WNYC. Talk to you tomorrow.